You are listening to the Cerberus Podcast with a K, available on Cerberus.com, iTunes, Stitch.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. I'm the editor of CastService.com. With me is James McLean. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing good. Doing good, thank you. Very good.
Good man. Good. We've also got an extremely special guest this week. It's Brian Terranova, cosplayer, celebrity extraordinaire. Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Mr. Famous, how are you?
Mr. Famous is great.
Yeah.
It's been a great time. Been a very, very great day.
No, I don't get this. This is wrong. The definition of special is someone who is important and carries priority over other people in regard to a certain subject or product. In this product, Brian is barely here because he can't be bothered to be here because he's floozying and jet setting and whatever around his oversized country. Look, Brian, it should be smaller. I mean, you can tell you need a plane to get around the place. Your country's too big. You need to bring it down, son. Bring it down to a more manageable size. I'm special because I'm here every bloody week contributing, making this thing good. He's not. Why should he get special? Why should he get your post-edit trumpets?
I will talk to my people about making it smaller. I am sorry. We weren't aware that this was a concern for people, to be honest. But now that
we try not to say anything because, you know, people who are obese, we're very polite. We don't sort of say to them, hey, you're obese, you know, your country's too large. You know, it's a bit embarrassing to say, hey, look, you know, sorry, mate, but, you know, you're a bit weighty on the countryside. There's a lot of skin there that's just not used.
I read somewhere that actually everyone in the world could live comfortably in Texas.
Yeah.
Which kind of screws up the overpopulation theory. But anyway, we're here to talk about Doctor Who, not the size of the United States of America. And the reason we'll start with Brian, because Brian was cosplaying a couple of weeks ago, Louisville.
Yes.
Yeah, and premiered some footage from one of your fan films. Is that right?
Yes.
How'd it go?
Oh, my God. It went amazing. First of all, the room that we had was the same room that Matt Smith was going to do his question and answer in.
Right.
So it was massive. We've never had a room this size before, and it was packed. People were actually sitting on the floor.
Just like a general Doctor Who room, then.
Well, I mean, it's Wizard World Comic Con, so the Wizard World covers everything from comic books to movies to TV shows, and they're really getting interested in Doctor Who, which is why one of the reasons why I was asked along. So the room was pretty much where they just held big event panel pieces for the big celebrities that were going to be there. Mm-hmm. And ordinarily, when we do these conventions, they give us a panel on our films. They already have it pre-set up. But when Eric and I were both there this time, for some reason, we found out there was a scheduling issue and we didn't have one, which was bad timing because Monday of that week that we went away for the con, BBC America, as well as Cerberus, just blogged about our series. But BBC America, you know, like they produce or co-produce Doctor Who and Torchwood or, you know, they're the American leg of it anyway. And here they are promoting us. And we were just like, guys, you got to get us a panel. Like we always have one. So they actually pushed back Matt Smith's question and answer panel so that they could squeeze us in, we just thought, like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you push back, Matt. Okay, awesome. So we promoted it like crazy the entire weekend just to tell everybody where we would be and who we were. And it seemed like there was a great response from people, but we never expected to see the size of that room and the amount of people that were in there. So we showed episode 3 in full. We showed a kind of a last time trailer, what you missed kind of thing. And then we showed episode 3 in full. And then we premiered the exclusive teaser trailer to our upcoming episode 4. which all of it went over really well. There were lots of great questions from the crowd, which unfortunately questions were at a minimum because since we were squeezed in before Matt, we did have to end our panel earlier than usual. But we still had a lot of really nice questions, which was very cool. So it was just quite a surreal experience. So amazing to see that many people who were not really aware of us. You know, like our Philadelphia response, I thought was kind of fun. And I figured, well, you know, a lot of people know us because we're from Philly, you know, but to be in Louisville and get that kind of response, that was very, very, I don't know, I can't find the word. It was amazing.
Memorable.
Oh, yes, quite.
Special.
We'll go with both of these. Can we take some polls from the audience too? No, they're
not this week. Not this week. They're quiet this week, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, congratulations for a good weekend there, Brian.
Yeah. And thank you.
Good buzz for your Doctor Who Torchwood crossover project. We'll move on now away from Brian's bizarre side life. And we'll cover some Doctor Who news this week. And I think next week, if we're all present, we're going to tackle this topic of redesigns in Doctor Who over the years. So that'll be quite interesting. But we're going to stick with the news generally this week, unless we end up sort of schisming off in some area. Robin Hood has never been in Doctor Who before, apparently. I find this bizarre. I find this hard to believe, but it is true. Doctor Who and Robin Hood have never encountered each other. Not even in The Chase.
That's where you expect it to appear.
It does, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
In bad Doctor Who.
And so we've got this rumour going on that there's a story called Robots of Sherwood and some casting recently announced. Ian Hallard, who played Richard Martin in An Adventure of Space and Time, is apparently, according to his online CV, playing Alan Adale. And then we've also got the other casting, Tom Riley, who is apparently a reasonably famous character actor who I haven't heard of until last week. He is therefore believed to be playing the famous man in tights. What do you think, Robin Hood in Doctor Who? Do you think, is that a thing? Do you think that's a thing that they should do? Or is it just bunkum?
I think it's something they could make work. You know, it would probably end up in many respects being maybe more of a silly tone story. For me, whether it or not it's something they actually should do, I don't know. I mean, it's not something I ever kind of thought needed to be done, but I'm sure they could make it work.
Yeah, Robin Hood's kind of Blake Seven has similarities with Robin Hood, but that's more close to Dirty Dozen, isn't it, as per Terry Nation's original idea. But it seems to me that when Robin Hood is mixed with sci-fi or fantasy, it suddenly turns into comedy. And that's not to say it's not a sensible notion to begin with, the idea of hiding out in the woods and stealing money from the rich people to give it to poor people to feed people. In our society, it seems a bit crazy. Well, I say in our society, until 2010, in our society, that sounded a bit crazy and a bit out there. But kind of since, certainly in the UK, since we've had the coalition government and its war against poverty, and when I say poverty I mean poor people,
yes.
It doesn't seem all that nonsensical, really. I'm thinking Time Bandits, really, and John Cleese as Robin Hood more than anything, which is superb stuff. What do you think, James?
I don't know. I find it's too close to the bone to me, I think. Uh-huh. And I think it feels like someone again in the shower suddenly thinking, Robots of Sherwood, Robin or Sherwood, that's a great idea. Maybe I can create a story from that funny pun. And I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I think I'm trying to think of, you know, the other things they've done in the past where they sort of incorporate. I mean, I don't think even Battlefield really worked with the Arthurian level of it. I just don't think. Cause I think Doctor Who sits on a very uncomfortable precipice of disbelief.
Yeah.
The concept is, you know, time traveling itself is fairly bizarre. The Doctor's TARDIS is fairly bizarre. The Doctor himself pushes the limit of bizarredom. And I think sometimes you need to keep it in a certain sort of stable framework for it to feel relevant and not fall into comedy. And I think while that means it can do satire and it can do silly stuff, I'm not saying it can't, I think when it starts challenging something else, which I don't think by today's standards, carries any level of realism to it. People don't, I mean, I know Robin Hood was very successful as a TV show a few years ago, and there was a lot of good stuff done there. And Robin of Sherwood in the 80s was fantastic stuff, good stuff done there, played straight. But the concept is sort of, I don't know, slightly fairy tale almost, British fairy tale. And I think that would, it feels to me as odd as if the Doctor met Peter Pan. Or I know that sounds like I'm trying to be silly. Actually, I'm not to be. It does feel that. It feels in that sort of niche. Peter Pan, Robin Hood, Little Red
Anyone
Riding
else dressed
Hood.
In green?
Yeah, well, Little Red Riding Hood. She's okay, dressed not. In red. There you go. That was a good choice. Thank God I got that one in. But that's what I mean. I feel it's too much an established bit of. But then I don't think the Shakespeare's Code worked fantastically well. I think Shakespeare's Code would work better if it didn't have Shakespeare in it.
If
it was just a writer. I think as soon as you put Shakespeare in there, it's too close to the bone again. It pulls you out. And again, I think to a certain degree, you know, the terror, I would call it the terror of the Daleks, just being because it's so bad. But and I can't even remember its name now, the Moffat Dalek one, the first one, Victory, would have probably been, I thought Winston Churchill was very well portrayed. Again, it makes everything feel smaller and more. Yeah, so you know what I feel now anyway.
Yes, okay. I wonder whether it is possibly something that would end up with a different title. I should hope it will end up with a different title, because I think it is too much of a pun. It's a bit Police Squad, isn't it?
It
Robots
is.
Of Sherwood.
And it's not even a very clever one either, because it doesn't sound like Robin of Sherwood. And it doesn't really... And I think also it's too snakes on the plane. It's too comical, too cheesy.
It
just feels almost like the show isn't confident enough to do that idea well.
So maybe feel a bit Series 7A with the movie titles and the movie theme thing going on. I hope they're moving away from that. Some interesting Robin Hood facts for the listeners. It's never been established whether or not Robin Hood actually existed or not. There's been many uprisings against taxation and stuff locally across the areas of the UK where he's supposed to have existed. There's also a Robin Hood Airport. Do you know about Robin Hood Airport?
No, I didn't.
It's in the Doncaster area.
Huh.
And there was some
that's why
kind
no one
of,
knows.
That's why no one knows, essentially, yeah. And there was kind of lots of questions about why, because he's normally associated with Nottinghamshire. Well, Nottingham, the city of Nottingham. But in those days, the Doncaster area was it's all part of the thing. It was more or less in Sherwood Forest, was stretching over there. Then you've got the Loxley area, which is again it's in South Yorkshire. So that's why they put it there, apparently. And my personal favourite thing about Robin Hood. Is away from the Robin of Sherwood TV series, is the King Raven trilogy by Stephen R. Lawhead. If you get a chance to pick up a copy of that, either in print or on Kindle, it's a really good series. And it kind of, remember how Robin of Sherwood, they were specifically concerned that they were named, the ruling classes were named as Normans.
Right.
Well, it kind of takes that, but takes it back 100 years. So it goes to about 50, 60 years post-Norman conquest, and it's set in South Wales. And it's very clever telling, and it kind of goes back. Remember all the mysticism of the Robin of Sherwood? It brings that into it as well. It's definitely worth a read.
I mean, in a sense, I can see why they'd gravitate towards, in the same way people would like to gravitate the Doctor Who towards Sherlock Holmes, which he has done in book form, at the very least, with All Consuming Fire, is that you think there is a natural logic there to it, in the sense that the Doctor is anti-establishment. He is there to protect the poor from oligarchs and monarchs and dictators. So to have him meet Robin Hood sort of carries a certain sort of, there's a synergy there between the ideas. But I just still feel it is just a little too fairy tale to people to actually feel that it's not going to actually do doubt. I think it's the worry that it'll do Doctor Who damage in a sense. Not in the sense, oh my, it's going to end, it can't cope now, they've done Robin Hood, it's going to fall apart. But whether it just, it will just make the story feel a bit wet. I don't know.
I agree with what you were saying before, though, that, it, you know, if you removed, say, Shakespeare from his own story, Whereas with that one, I kind of feel Shakespeare did work for my personal taste. I think with this story, if they actually didn't have a Robin Hood, but the Doctor was reason for the actual Robin Hood legend to have started, or somebody else within the story in some way, that could work very well, I think.
The robots being his robots that he puts out to protect the village that he's protecting. You know, I see what you mean. Yeah. That
or,
could
or
be a
they
way
were
they
were there
it,
to pillage and he reprogrammed them or something, and just somehow that legend was born. Like that would be a much better way to address it, especially since you are dealing with essentially a fictional character. You know, for all intents and purposes, it would make a lot more sense than getting somebody like Shakespeare. To me.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I think that could be possibly the root on this.
Although there, of course, are a few people who say that Shakespeare didn't exist.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But I mean, the problem is that I think what the problem people have with it is that the way that TV portrays famous people is often very against the actual historical grain of them. Or how they would be in that sort of context. And I think that's why, to some degree, people don't like them to be personified, because they'll never be personified accurately enough to feel that it works. That being said, you know, I kind of like, I like, well, we haven't seen it in full yet, but The Crusade I do enjoy, even though, because it does personify those characters in ways, I think probably because people don't really know much about people like Richard the Lionheart and... that like, you know, contemporary people don't tend to know much, so it is kind of historically informative in a way. No, it's not accurate, it gives you a sort of feel for the era, while Robin Hood is so much more of a sort of pastiche idea rather than actual evidence of what was going on at the time. And there's a lot of people who'll say, you know, that say that King John wasn't the dick that Dick, his brother, thought he was. You know, he was actually meant to be, some sources say he was actually meant to be quite a good ruler. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know.
I think that's the thing though, with historical stories, I mean, or rather, excuse me, with time travel TV shows, you can either just go back to that era and, you know, say choose, an era with knights, and you don't need any actual historical figures. All you need is a castle and knights and a situation to put people in. Mm. Or you can go back and you can choose a historical figure, because it makes sense, because you're time traveling. Why not meet historical figures? So that's why I kind of feel, like I said, with Shakespeare being in the Shakespeare code, it makes more sense. Otherwise, you could have told that story in any era you wanted. That lost story could have been found in 2017, and you wouldn't have needed Shakespeare. All you would needed was his words on the paper. But if you're going to go back to the era that it was actually written in, why not have the legend with it?
Maybe
it just makes sense.
Maybe the argument would be, if Doctor Who is very much about little people, I mean, there's that one of those lovely little Matt Smith quotes, isn't it? About strange. I've never met a person who isn't remote, who isn't important before, or it was to paraphrase. And I kind of like that. So in a sense that the show keeps showing him having to go meet these big people almost sort of goes against that grain, in the sense that the only people in history who are important are the important people. They're the only ones he seems to go and meet. And in a kind of way, it would be interesting. I know we've said this before, like for Victory of the Daleks, he didn't meet Winston Churchill, but he was among the average troopers, you know, the people who don't get the focus on.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I think Doctor Who, I mean, I like the, I think Aztecs works very well for that reason, is that it's all entirely fictitious. There's no, they're not specifically historical Aztecs. So it becomes like you're feeling like you're in their society rather than you're in a historical story. So
and the classic series did it really well too, with, you know, mentioning Da Vinci, but never actually coming across him.
Yes.
You know, the Doctor met him, but we never had to see it.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. And there's ones, I mean, The Crusade does push it close to the bone, but there's ones like Reign of Terror where there is a slight rubbing up with historical figures, but largely it's not about them. And that's, that kind of works as well, where you don't really touch them. They're there, but you're not really, that they're not the focus. But anyway, you know, it's an interesting topic. We came onto this podcast, I thought this would be a really boring topic, and it's been quite interesting. It's made me think. You there, Christian?
I am indeed here, yes.
Mm. Just making sure you knew that.
Okay, so let's move on to our next topic this week, which is, it's not really a news item. It's, we chatted to Andrew Cartmell this week about the reissue of his script doctor book.
And if you haven't seen the interview, it's a text interview. You don't need to have a media player thing going on at the time. He chatted to Phil. So if you haven't already got the book, now is a good time to get it because it's been updated and re-edited and there's new material, a small amount of new material in there. So it's worth getting hold of, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I was looking at the article as well. I mean, I was thinking, oh my God, there's not that much new material in. That's a shame. I thought, oh, wait a sec, I haven't actually got the original. So it's actually full of new material if I went and got it because I've not got the original. So, yes, I think I'll probably get that this year because I've always liked his work and he's a lovely guy. So,
yeah.
And it's an era that I think, as we've said many times before, it's a sort of an era that's had so much influence on Doctor Who and yet it never gets really noted for it because everyone goes, oh, yeah, Tom Baker. Yeah, he was, you know, it was amazing. Yeah, yeah. But Tom Baker aside, Peter Hinchcliffe aside.
Philip Hinchcliffe.
Philip. I thought, yeah, Peter. I thought Peter Hinchcliffe. Who the hell's that? But Philip Hinchcliffe aside, you know, that is an era. Cartmel's era is absolutely pivotal to where the show went.
Yeah. Couldn't argue with that. Brian, what do you think?
I'm interested to pick it up because obviously I think, as I've said many times, I think the show kind of just started to really pick up and become good again right when they decided to cancel it, you know, and or rather they had already canceled it and it's in its last season, picked up and was good again. And while I know of some of what obviously is known as the Cartmel Master Plan was to come in the next few episodes, or the next season that we never got. I'm actually kind of glad some of those ideas were never seen on screen, which is a shame to say. But as it is, I really enjoyed what he did with the era that we do have. So I'd be very interested to read this new. I haven't read the first one like James either, but I'd be very happy to read the new re-release of this book now. I mean, I really think he started to do good things for the show.
I mean, he says in the interview on the Custodes, which I thought was quite interesting, the way he said, you know, despite. As Brian says, you know, and as he said to us before, you know, there are ideas that he hadn't done.
Mm-hmm.
Largely speaking, he was trying to sort of say, I wasn't looking to try and explain the Doctor, but to, in a sense, to create a mystery, you have to ask it, which is what he was trying to do, I think. And that's quite a clever route because he's right. Because, I mean, Doctor Who is he? No one has ever known. But it's only to that series did they actually sort of say, well, who is he? Which is no different really to the rest of this era, but you've got to ask that question for it to be topical. And I kind of like, I was thinking that when I was reading this today, I was reading the article and I was thinking back to Silver Nemesis and almost like a perfect imagery of that era is at the end where Lady Peinfort says, I will tell everyone your secrets. And he says, go on, tell them. And she goes, your secrets are. And then the Cyberman sort of bolsters. And now the Cyberman could be an imagery for the BBC. So this show's sort of saying, yes, this character is really interesting. This is what we're going to do. This is what, no, your secrets, your ideas are irrelevant. And it had that sort of flat tone, lack of compassion of a corporation.
Irrelevant.
Yes, that's it. You're done. We've wasted too much time with this fiffle faffle, and it just seemed to embody that whole thing. You know, this interesting thing that was starting to emerge.
You've made me actually.
Oh, go on.
No, I was just going to say, James really made me want to see in the new series, if they ever try to explain too much, I just want to see BBC execs come in all Monty Python and go, no, stop that. No singing. No more singing.
There's that little line, isn't there? Is it in the Voyager graphic comic era with John Ridgway doing the art where he does that line and he sort of said, I've been attacked by many people, and it goes through the list. I'm sure BBC producers was put at the end of it. Or that might have been something that was in a Peter Haining book. I can't remember, but I saw it somewhere and it was damn cool.
I was going to say is that there is the other side of it, whereas we although we didn't know who the Doctor was, we kind of did know a bit too much about him. And I think a lot of it was a reaction to all those trips to Gallifrey that were having to, sorry, IKEA that were happening throughout the 1980s.
Well, I think that's what he was trying to find, wasn't it? And yet, in some way, in that bizarro world, which until, you know, the new series came back, and suddenly McCoy era is the golden era as well as everyone else. But back then, it was the shit era, the era of where things were crap. and people were saying, well, look what he was trying to do, to introduce this idea of the mystery and things happening in the past of Gallifrey, giving us too much. But you're right, I mean, that was sort of trying to get rid of this whole sterile, boring sort of like family that he was created with Gallifrey in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. The other thing about it as well is there's that kind of attempt to strip it back and sort of get rid of the interior of the TARDIS, as happened with a big chunk of the Pertwee era. What do you think would be the reaction if they did that today?
What do you mean get rid of the interior of the TARDIS?
Well,
what am I missing there?
Well, basically no scenes inside the interior of the TARDIS. Very little interior of the TARDIS in the McCoy era.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but that wasn't really intentional, though.
It was.
I think it was to a degree.
I think Cartmell said at one point he wanted to get to a position where the TARDIS lands at the place and the Doctor story moves on. You don't need those interior shots to set it up.
Those kind of okay, yes, I get that. I was going to say, because I do know that at one point the set was deteriorated because there is an episode where it's just the walls are just curtains.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, no, that yeah, I agree with that because, you know, coming back again to the whole fan filmmaking aspect, I've had many people say to me, you know, how do you get around the TARDIS console room? And I've cited many examples in the past, not even just Pertwee, but many of them, even in the Tom Baker era. Where the whole point is that the TARDIS is just a means to bring you to the story. You know, the TARDIS wasn't something that needed to be dwelled on. There's plenty of stories where you can just land the ship, have your heroes walk out, and that's it. You're in the adventure. You don't need anything inside. So I do agree with that aspect. I think getting rid of the TARDIS interior completely loses some of the magic to people who are new to the show. And you got to remember that every episode is somebody's first. So, you know, occasionally you will want to show it, but I think it's great to not show it every episode. I don't believe it's necessary to always be within the TARDIS for an episode.
Because I must admit, I remember, you know, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, well, to a certain degree, the new series did do that by the fact that it wasn't until, what, series 6 before we saw anything, any corridors. It was just the control room and a dress costume room, and that was it. So in a sense, it did sort of tail it back a bit, but I remember as a kid, the inside of the TARDIS was really important to me. You know, I think we've said before, when I used to pick up the Doctor Who novelizations, I used to scan through to see how many times the word TARDIS would appear in the book, and if it didn't appear in enough, I'd put it back. And yeah, other books, which like The Mythmakers or The Faceless Ones, which had a TARDIS very clearly on the front, would be ones I'd gravitate to. So from a kid point of view, I think it's very easy to dismiss the importance of the interior of the TARDIS because it's the magical home. It's what a lot of kids will watch it for to some degree, and they want to be there, they want to play in the TARDIS. And yet I agree with Andrew and I agree with Brian as well, there is a certain beauty and confidence and truth to the point of Doctor Who, that you don't always need to be in there. You can sort of move the story along and make the story a lot more interesting if, you know, there are times where you just don't have that disconnect of those two worlds. You're just firmly in one world. I think it works really well in Curse of Fenric. The TARDIS appears at the beginning, they get out, you don't see it for the rest of the time, you don't need it. You're totally fixated in that time period. You don't go anywhere else. And I think it really works like that. So yeah, a bit of both, isn't it? In it.
In it. In it like. Okay. We will push on in a moment. Some news has just come in. It's not like groundbreaking isn't the word I'm looking at. It's not earth shattering. They're both the same things, yet they mean different. Interesting. Basically, Doctor Who Magazine has won a press award.
Oh, good. There
you go. Well done, Doctor Who Magazine.
Did you ever get any follow up on our article last week, which everyone seemed to ignore, about Marco Polo? Did that ever get admitted to being April Fool's, or did it ever get admitted to anything else?
Yes. It was Doctor Who Online's April Fool.
It was.
It was Doctor Who Online's April Fool that Marco Polo had been listed, with a very clever graphic to say that Marco Polo had been listed and it was an April Fool by Doctor Who Online.
We've been made fools of.
You know, it's interesting that they would do that, because a lot of my friends and I were talking about how, because I'd missed this, I didn't even know that this April Fool joke had happened, but we were talking about how it was very telling.
It's funny you should say that, because half the internet didn't know it had happened, but Doctor Who Online insist that it was an April Fool joke and that loads of people found it hilarious.
Yeah. I could tell you...
I didn't find it very funny, I can tell you.
I don't know many people who would. You know, especially the comments that we were throwing back and forth was, it seemed either very telling for the BBC or just a very wise move for the BBC to avoid a April Fool's joke like that, certainly in light of everything that's been going on with all the sorts of rumors out there. I mean, that's bad form, essentially. And we all kind of thought, well, maybe by the fact that they're not doing an April Fool's joke, that there's hopefully something going on, which is being very optimistic. But the other thing was just, you don't want to mess with people that way. So to hear that somebody else actually did do it, that's sad.
I mean, they did it very well. I mean, I've got to give them credit. The pulling of it was a smart move. It was a def, so it wasn't so obvious.
Hmm.
But, yeah, it's just like, I'm a bit like that with April Fools. I think, like, so what? You know, I feel it's just, I know you do. You have to do them for your, for the website as well. But part of me just thinks, really? You spend all that time planning for this one?
Well, as I said, this year I didn't have anything to do with it. I'd kind of given up any semblance of doing it, and then all of a sudden someone had submitted something and then told me 3 hours later that they'd done it. I thought mad, basically, when I first saw it pop up. I hadn't realised what was going on. Very, very silly of me. So I think if you can do it, if you can get the right tone to it and not make it so important, so earth-shatteringly important,
I think that's it.
Marco Polo being found, then it's funny. If it's something like that, that so many people have been waiting for, you know, 50 years or the last 2 years since the Omni rumor sprouted, 3 years since the Omni rumor sprouted, then it's taking the piss out of people, and people don't like to have the piss taken out of them.
I think it's also a problem that I think what people consider to be good April Fools are ones where, to a certain degree, they can see the art of the comedy within the April Fool.
Yeah.
So it's something which flows, that sort of blends in seamlessly, but if you're actually reading instead of just browsing, you will see it quite clearly. I think that's the talent of an April Fool. It's got to be something which is in itself a little absurd, and you feel foolish because you've missed something that was absurd.
Yeah.
It's quite easy to sort of say, well, you know, you could have done for April Fool's, you know, something to go on the extreme end, missing plane found. Now, you go, oh, April Fool's. Well, so, no,
that's actually a scam at the moment, missing plane found. There's some apps on Facebook that are posting to people's accounts that that has happened, and then that gets shared with their friends, and then their friends will click on that and end up opening something that they probably wouldn't want to open normally.
Well, this is it. And, you know, it's the sort of bad taste spectrum, really, because it's not hard to do that. If you're doing an April Fool's, take something which people want, say it's happening. Oh, no, it isn't. But that's not the crux of the April Fool. The April Fool's got to take something which is bizarre that you almost believe unless you actually read it properly.
Yeah.
It's for those. It's a browser virus, isn't it? Not browsers in Firefox or anything, or Google, other ones available, but it's about, you know, how we browse and we read things, and we will gloss over something without looking at it carefully enough to not realize that there's a fool in there. And often, as I know you've done as well, the best April Fools will actually let you know it's an April Fool within it, and if you miss it, then it's done it, if you know what I mean. You look back after you realize April Fools and you see in there the clues. That's a talent. I can't believe we're talking about this.
Well, you know, the other thing too is just anymore, I'm surprised that anybody reads a bit of news on April 1st and doesn't look at it with a bit of skepticism, because, you know,
I'm surprised you don't listen to Doctor Who online.
What's that?
Oh, he's angry now.
Nice, yeah. No, but seriously, like, it's just, if somebody had announced on April 1st, I know for sure that there would have been a part of me that said, man, I hope this is real, but I would have just taken it with the largest grain of salt, period, because of the day that it was posted on. You know, and you know, I mean, looking back, it's sad because there can be real things announced on April 1st. Because if you, I don't know if you guys know the comedian Mitch Hedberg, but a couple of years ago, this guy, he had passed away on March 31st, and they announced it on April 1st. So everybody thought it was a big joke from him, and it was just bad timing. You know, so yeah, there can be true things, but I just think something like that, always take with a grain of salt, and certainly something that high profile as a missing Doctor Who episode probably should have been really done tongue in cheek. This way people completely got that you were just screwing around with them.
Well, that's why, you know, because we talked about it, and at first as people listened to last week's podcast will probably be able to see, at first, you know, both of us are like, well, it's an April Fool's, and part of you thinks, well, you know, these things do happen, and I can't see the joke in this. I can't see the gimmick. I can't see the punchline in it. So maybe it is real because it's a story. It's not a joke. It's not an absurd story. It is something which is very likely to be happening, as we've said many times in the last few months. A lot of rumours that it's going to be happening. So it's not absurd. it isn't funny, it's not clever, so maybe it is actually real. Maybe this is just a bad day and it was put on there accidentally and pulled off. So in a sense, maybe the April Fool is on them. I think I said last week as well, which means I said it twice, which means the April Fool's pretty much on me.
Yeah. Did anyone hear you say it last week, though? That's the thing.
Ah, well, that's it. You know,
we don't know what happened last week anymore, do we? There's loads of things said in one of them that didn't.
Oh, that's
the
a good
one.
Point. That's a good point. Did we even talk about it in the second one?
I've no idea at all.
So we might have just explored something we could have kept quiet and not let people know that we were tricked by.
I think it's fair to say that you guys aren't our listeners.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I have a horrible feeling because April 1st, was that the Monday?
Yes.
Oh.
No, it was a Tuesday, wasn't it?
So it was the day that we recorded.
Oh, God, I don't know what the hell. Right, April.
It's like time, isn't it? It is
we
Tuesday,
recorded
yes.
on the Monday and we recorded on the Tuesday.
So we recorded on the Tuesday, which is April 1st, so we probably said it on the Tuesday. Yeah. Yes, it was because it was the article that you gave me. That I didn't know what was going to happen. Or,
yes,
that's there
right.
we go.
Tried to make it edgy, Brian, because we'd already gone through it all. We made it edgy, so I didn't tell him what we were going to talk about.
I see. That's, man.
It was on the edge, isn't it? Amazing how a week goes by and I can't even remember.
You had to go out and get
I'm
pissed
so glad you didn't
in order
do it
to
this
match
week.
The buzz.
Right.
Okay, so moving on. We're kind of looking at more of a compact show this week, even though there's three of us for some reason. But I did want to give a mention to the Temporal Logbook, a Doctor Who short story collection, which is looking for contributors.
Right.
It's a nice little concept. It's been said that Doctor Who is one of the most flexible formats in television drama, as we know. And this is a new short story collection featuring original Doctor Who fiction by new and upcoming writers. And it will be published. It's for charity, for the Positive Living Society of British Columbia, and which was formerly known as BC Persons with AIDS Society. And the collection will be published by Canadian publisher Pencil Tip Publishing. And 100% of the proceeds will be going to the charity. You'll find the stuff that you need in the show notes below. They have a submissions policy and guidelines that you'll need to pick up and read in PDF format or on the website. And then they also have a Facebook page and a blog that you should follow as well. So please do that because it looks pretty good. I might have a go at it myself, time permitting. And I think that's probably it for news. So shall we move into the realm of recommendations?
Oh, why not?
Well, why not? Shall we start with Brian? Because he hasn't done one for a week or so.
Knock yourself out.
Go on then.
Okay. Guess what? I don't really have one.
Why the hell not?
No, in fairness, I've been very busy. I haven't actually been watching much Doctor Who or listening to much Doctor Who or TV at all. However, I do have a fun. It's not really like watch this TV show kind of recommendation, but it is fun videos. I would say take to YouTube and look up Superhero Beatdown. Excuse me, Superpower Beatdown. They're videos made partly by a friend of mine, and. They're amazing. I mean, you can watch things like Wolverine versus the Predator, Darth Vader versus Gandalf, the White Power Ranger versus the Scorpion, which having met the White Power Ranger in person, I can say he's freaking awesome. You should watch the video. But they're awesome. They're very well done. They try to find battles that are interesting and make you kind of guess which one is actually going to come out the winner at the end. And they're just a heck of a lot of fun. So video wise, they're probably the most interesting thing I've seen for a while now. Certainly on the YouTubes, as they say, and I would definitely highly recommend that. And since we talked about it in the beginning, I'll go ahead and recommend my Legacy series again, which you can find on the YouTube channel, The Smoke 007, or on Facebook at Legacy Films 2014. So there you go. There are my recommendations.
Thank you very much. James, do you have a recommendation?
I finished the Tales of Trenzalore this week, in fact, this morning.
Okay, and how did you feel about it?
I felt that it was largely light fluff, but it was easy to read and fairly enjoyable light fluff, but I would say it was aimed at a slightly younger age group than, I don't know,
30 to 40.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't bad. It looks like it's coming out in paperback, and I think it's a nice idea. I don't feel as if it had enough continuity within it to feel like it did the idea justice enough. But the stories themselves aren't bad, and it's nice to see the 11th Doctor facing off foes that he's not faced off before, particularly. The Mara story particularly is quite good. I've watched the Megalos DVD special features yesterday as well. I always enjoy any commentary with Lala Ward in, because there is just such a uncomfortable, I don't want to say bitterness, because I don't, you know, having not lived with Tom, I can't say what a git he could probably be. But there's a sort of brutal honesty that always comes out eventually by episode 4 in regards to Tom, which always makes him quite a pleasure to listen to. As she rattles on, and there's a very nice there's two very nice special features on there. There's one of Jaclyn Hill, which is because obviously she appeared in that one as a final Doctor Who appearance, and there's another one which is just a very straight science one on entropy.
All right.
Which given that, as they point out, is largely to do with Bidmead season, is quite pertinent and it's quite serious, so I'm sure Gareth Cavanagh will be very upset to watch that feature, given that there's no spring noises, bouncing bouncing balls, or whatever comedy Graham Williams liked to employ in Doctor Who. So, yeah, no, I would go for that. What's about you?
Okay. Well, I have purchased a new DVD player, so I will be making good on my previous promise to watch The Curse of Fenric and then have a chat about it at some point in the future.
Eventually.
Very shortly. And I'm also doubling up with Brian Morbius, which I didn't have on DVD either.
Oh, cool.
And I haven't seen it in quite a while, actually. I haven't seen it in about 10 years. So I'm certainly looking forward to watching that one again. You know, Philip Maddox in it. That's reason enough to watch it. And then Tom Baker's in it. This is reason enough to watch it. And, you know, it's just great, isn't it? So I'll be looking forward to watching that again. In terms of, well, you know, recommend. You want me to recommend something to you, dear Casterbus Podcast with a K listener?
Is there a gap there so they can say yes? No.
Yes. Yes. No. No, we don't.
No, go away, North Face.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Well,
oh,
they're pretty rude, the listeners.
Are they? The listener's quite rude, is he? Yeah. She? Right, I see.
You know, you know, North Face is a brand of clothing.
Is it?
Is it?
Yeah. No. Is it? It's a rude thing over there.
Right. Well, what I'm going to do? I'm going to recommend.
I just made it up.
He's just made it up.
Okay.
I think North comes Face, from the north, and he has a face.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Well, I am going to recommend what I kind of alluded to earlier on, the King Raven trilogy, the Robin Hood books that came out within the last sort of 5 or 6 years they were released, and they're really good. They're worth a read. They're about 300 to 400 pages each, so you'll need like a couple of nights to get through them.
I tell you what to recommend. I recommend that you write a strong worded letter to iPlayer, obviously, because not the BBC. iPlayer is a place or person who you have to write a letter to, because I'm getting very annoyed with the way they approach their iPlayer catch up. I recommended The Musketeers to my grandmother, and she'd seen episode 9, and I thought she'd like to see episode, you know, see the series. So yesterday she started to watch episode 1 and got delayed because of something else, and then today, because it's a week after episode 10, all of them are removed.
They've done
that to me with Ripper Street. They've done that to me with The Fall as well. And I find the most ridiculous thing that you can have episode 1 is on there for 11 weeks, yet episode 10 is on there for 1 week.
It's very, very silly, isn't it?
It seems very silly to me, because you know, if you find a series halfway through, it's very hard, unless you've got nothing to do, to catch up in time to get to the end, because episode 10 is gone in a week.
Well, I had been intending on doing it, but other things got in the way of my little girl being poorly and stuff, so that didn't really happen for me. So it looks like it's going to be DVD or Netflix.
Yes.
For me, yes.
DVD probably for me. But so, yes, that's my recommendation. Complain or shout at your computer. Shout at your computer. I'm sure that will work.
Or write a letter to the BBC.
No, don't do that. That's old-fashioned writing letters.
Everything can be done. The BBC.
By shouting at your screen.
And for the phone number to the BBC, just listen to the coordinates that Tom Baker gives in many episodes.
I think it's slightly out of date now.
Is that true, though? I didn't know that.
Yeah, supposedly. Well, according to him, anyway, he says that in an episode or two whenever he found the coordinates were too much that were written in the script, he would just give out the BBC television listen to center number.
If we listen in future, listen to coordinates that begin at 01, because or 8, if you're already in London, it would be an 8, wouldn't it? Or it would have been 01 if you're outside London.
I'm just trying to think. You know, it's funny when you're a kid, those things sit.
01 8 11 8 0 5 5 5.
Yes, yeah. Isn't that scary?
Yes,
isn't that scary?
What is that?
It's was it swap shop?
Yeah.
Good lord.
Oh really?
So what's that like? About 1980,
90? Well, it wasn't their original number. I've since discovered.
Right.
But that's their number from 1979 to 1982. I think I'm right. I think Saturday Superstore had the same number as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is weird, isn't it?
Isn't it? I tried ringing it once, but I dialed it wrong and I got some woman in Buckinghamshire.
Wow.
Yeah, I wanted to. In fact, I think it was probably Peter Davison or Colin Baker or someone like that who was on whatever show it was. And
I thought you meant that was the person in Buckinghamshire. Yeah, I was thinking, wow, that was a good call. Good wrong number there.
Oh, no. They were going to be on the show. No, I didn't actually get through to Colin Baker. Chances of that.
I want to ask you about a role that you've not actually taken yet.
What's your favourite colour?
Why are you so bad?
Oh!
Well, it wasn't his fault.
Indeed. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Castover's podcast with a K with aeroplanes flying over Brian Terranova's house.
My house, actually.
James's house in order to bomb him to Christmas.
Oh, I did feel like that, yeah.
Damned infidel that he is. So we'll be back next time. Bye-bye. What's going on, James?
I don't know. I was thinking, is this it? Is this the end?
More than one plane flies over and you're thinking, Christ, it's happening. That happens in missiles, believe me.
It's the 80s for you. The 80s, yeah, the Cold War gives you that. I still have nightmares. One of my main nightmares is a nuclear attack, and that is of the being a kid. And that sort of being so prevalent, wasn't it, in the 80s, yeah, that sort of fear.
We did drills.
Did you?
So I think we talked about this before, haven't we? We did drills in primary school until the mid-80s. Yeah, we had to run outside, line up, and then run back into the classrooms and get under the desk.
That's terrible, isn't it? Especially since it would do bugger all.
Yeah, and do you know what else? No one else can remember it.
Really?
It's really irritating.
No one remembers doing the drills?
No.
Weird.